Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Ginn, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages on Twitter to the show at GoForItGant. That's at GoForItGant, and that's at twitter.com. So make sure you follow us there and send us some questions there on Twitter as well. Big show for you today. Expected to be joined by cornerback Drayton Florence from the 3-0 Buffalo Bills. Couldn't you believe it? And I guess no one circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills, and they are 3-0, and Drayton's going to join us to talk about it also. 11-time Pro Bowler, 2012 Hall of Fame finalist, the great Willie Rofe, and Willie Rofe will be joining us, and we're going to talk football as usual with the great Willie Rofe and get his thoughts on what's going on around the league and get his thoughts on Mike Vick and is he getting treated unfairly. We're going to get Willie's thoughts there. And boxer Devin Alexander, newest member of Golden Boy Promotions, now a welterweight. He's going to be boxing at 147 now. He's going to be joining us, and we're going to see what's going on with him and see what's new with him. Willie Rofe, Drayton Florence, Devin Alexander, make sure you stick around and enjoy this great show. Jeremy, how are you, sir?
You know, getting a little chilly out there, so I'm going to put a blankie on me if you don't mind. And we're going to get right into, I think you were discussing right before the show, you know, you think you're comparing Michael Vick. I want to hear, does Michael Vick to Phil Jackson?
Well, we're talking about Michael Vick, and Michael Vick, as we all know now, he came out last week, and he basically told the officials and everybody, you know what, I'm getting treated unfairly, I'm taking unnecessary hits, and I'm not being officiated the way Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or any of those guys are being officiated. It's not the same. Michael Vick came out and said that. He avoided fine. He did not get fined. And to me, you know, I look at Michael Vick, and I heard Adam Schefter say this, and it went through my mind as well. Michael Vick got a little Phil Jackson in him. So, I mean, we all know Phil Jackson. Every time in the playoffs, Phil Jackson always throws that little thing out there to the media about the officials, about his guy not being officiated right and his guy not getting a certain calls. And Michael Vick has done the same thing, everybody. Now, everybody will be watching Michael Vick very closely. They will be watching Michael Vick very closely now because he put it out there. He told the world, you know what? I ain't being treated fairly, and it's not right. And so what? So now he put it out there, and everybody's going to be watching it with their microscopes now. Everyone is going to be watching. And I will say this. The hit that he took from Chris Canty was, to me, an illegal hit. It was high. It was a helmet-to-helmet hit. And it was an illegal hit. A flag should have been thrown. That should have been 15 yards. And that was the hit that we thought broke Michael Vick's hand at the time, but we later found out it's a deep bruise. So Michael Vick avoided that. But I think what happened there with this whole situation with Michael Vick, I think it was a situation where he was frustrated that they lost. He was frustrated that he could not finish the game. And he was frustrated that he possibly may miss a lot of time with a broken hand. I think that's what brought him to talk about that. And some could argue that he may have threw his offensive line under the bus. I wouldn't say, you know, directly, but indirectly he might have thrown him under the bus because he did say every time he throws the ball, you see the clips, I'm always on the ground. So he might have threw his offensive line under the bus indirectly, but I don't think that was his intent. I think it was just frustration and frustrated at losing the game, frustrated, again, at not being able to finish, and frustrated that he possibly could miss a lot of time, but he won't. He will be back this week against the San Francisco 49ers, so that's a good situation for him. But when I look at Michael Vick, he's a guy a lot like Shaq. A guy, in some respect, because of his skill set, is very hard to officiate. He's very hard to officiate. Bottom line is, once you're out the pocket, you're out the pocket, and you know, you become a runner. But Michael Vick's skill set is so different than anybody who's ever played the quarterback position. So much different. And it was like Shaq. Shaq, again. No, we never saw a guy as big as Shaq, as nimble as Shaq at that size. Never. And I think Michael Vick is a lot like that. And I think, therefore, he's a hard guy to officiate. He becomes a hard guy to officiate. But do I think Michael Vick is taking unnecessary hits and being treated unfairly? I don't think so, because I look around the league and I see the calls that guys are getting, and not necessarily Tom Brady. If you look at Mike Kafka against the Atlanta Falcons, that hit by John Abraham, where John Abraham was a little low in terms of his helmet, was a little low with the helmet, low helmet to the back, but he grabbed him right after he did it, and it really was not an egregious foul, and it should not have been called. So, and then I saw Trent Dilfer. He had a clip of Matt Ryan, and Matt Ryan took a helmet-to-helmet hit against the Philadelphia Eagles, Colin Jenkins, and that was not called. So I look at this and I say, does Michael Vick have a point here or beef? I don't necessarily think so. I think he's treated just like any other quarterback in this league. And I will say this: he's hard to officiate. Go ahead, Jeremy.
He's hard to officiate. No, Paul, he's a quarterback in the NFL. I mean, how many penalties have we seen for much lesser infractions than he? I say that, yes, because he's athletic and he moves around, but he has taken hits that are clearly late. And this is a guy that you have to put. And remember, Paul, this isn't a quarterback in the NFL. This is one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. Listen, because he's mobile and because Peyton Manning doesn't give players the right, 3, 4, 5 seconds after he's gotten rid of the ball to slam into him. I mean, and I don't think that his comment was actually, I don't think it was derived at the offensive line. I think, if anything, it was to make the officials understand they have to watch, him. And I'll take it a step further, and I will say this. I think that you can clearly see, Paul, there must be a lot of dog owners that are present-day NFL officials. Because to me, it's very simple to see whether you appreciate Mike Vick, the athlete, or not. If you're an official, you have to call the game the same. It's no different than when you watch these umpires in baseball. One game of a three-game series, the strike is on the inside corner. Then somehow the next game, the strike is on the outside corner. And fans and media alike will complain about that. You have to call the game the same. If Peyton Manning gets the late hit penalty, or if you brush yourself against, if you brush yourself up against a quarterback, then certainly, I mean, there was 5, 7-plus hits in that Giants game that were well beyond late.
Well, I would disagree with you. I mean, if he's out of the pocket, if he's running, he's open to anything. He's open to anything. He's a runner. He's a runner. So he's open. The roles are no different for him than Arian Foster once he's in the open field and once he's running. I just think right now Michael Vick's complaint maybe should be with himself. Some are saying he's holding the ball a little too long. And maybe his complaint should be with his offensive line, because every time he's throwing the ball, he's always getting hit. So guess what, Michael? Something's going on there that's not right. Every time you're throwing the ball, you're getting hit. You're not getting the necessary protection that you need to be successful. You're not getting the protection. So your beef shouldn't be with the officials. Your beef should be with you, and your beef should be with your offensive line. That's who your beef should be with, those two people. Those two, not the officials, your linemen, your offensive linemen, you should have beef with, and yourself. That's it. You need to sometimes look at that man in the mirror and ask him to change some of your ways, and some of your ways may be holding the ball a little too long than you need to be. But I just look at this whole situation, and I think inadvertently Michael Vick has a little Zen in him. He's got a little Phil Jackson in him. He's become a Zen master, if you will, and he's throwing this out there. And again, like I stated earlier, everybody's going to be looking. You know you're going to be looking. All the fans will be looking, and
Paul,
the officials.
First of all, Paul, we were looking before. Let's keep this real. We were looking before.
Well, there was complaints about this last year. There were complaints about this last year. And I know that was against the Cowboys. There was a game where he felt like he was taking a lot of unnecessary hits. I think Andy Reid came out and said something about that at the time. I mean, you know, I don't think Michael Vick has taken any unnecessary. I think he's being officiated no differently than anybody else in this league and no other quarterback in this league. But I will say this, he is a harder guy to officiate because of his skill set and because of his talent. You could make the argument that Shaq took a big time beating during his time in the league, and Shaq could have got more foul calls against him, and some say he could have got more foul calls, not against him, but he could have had more foul calls. I mean, there could have been more fouls called in terms of Shaq and what he's done. And some would say Shaq, some of the moves that he was doing were offensive fouls and so on and so forth, and the bottom line is that maybe he should have called more offensive fouls.
Let me ask you this, and you agree, Paul. I mean, there's no question that Michael Vick you will label him an elite quarterback in the NFL.
Well, yes, I think so. I think that's fair to say at this point.
So I mean, do you think that let me even ask you this. I mean, you think that those hits were going to be tolerated even against Eli Manning? You think Eli Manning was going to be allowed? I mean, at that one hit, it was clearly, I'm telling you, 4 or 5 seconds after Vic released the ball, you watch a defensive lineman slam into him, and he's on the ground.
I only saw one hit to me that was egregious, and that was the hit where he thought he fractured his hand and eventually became a deep bruise to his hand. I thought that was the only hit that was egregious in that game. All the other hits to me were legal. And the bottom line is, I think it was just frustration talking. I don't really know if he believed some of the things that he was saying. I think frustration was doing the talking that day.
He was frustrated.
I think that's why he came out with all the stuff that he came out with.
But that's
bottom line
Paul,
is, I mean,
listen,
but bottom line is, if you have a beef, your beef needs to be with your offensive line. Bottom line, if you have a beef, your beef needs to be with the offensive line, and it needs to be with yourself, because maybe you're holding on to the ball too long, and also maybe you're not getting the necessary protection that you need.
So you don't,
that's
oh, you
who
don't
your beef should be with.
You don't think that some of these dog lover officials out there are treating this guy absolutely
no,
they're
I
turning
don't think,
around.
I don't think, you're no, saying, I don't think that's the case.
Well,
I don't think
I mean,
that's the case.
It's been apparent for a long time, Paul, and for many of the fans on the air new to us. Let me tell you, I've known this man, unfortunately, way too long, and it's unfortunate that I have to make people aware. This is not a real Philadelphia fan. I mean, he is a fair weather. Right now, it's nice outside, so in a fair weather.
Well, I mean,
time,
I have to keep it, as they say in the streets. I have to keep it 100. And to keep it at 100, I have to tell you how I feel. And the way I feel is Michael Vick. What he was complaining about, I don't think it was legitimate.
Okay.
I think he's treated
here,
just
right?
fine. And I think, again, his beef needs to be with his offensive line, and his beef needs to be with himself. And speaking of the offensive line, let's bring in one of the greatest offensive linemen to ever play the game, the great Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Paul, I see both of your points, but I do think It was another shot he took that was close to the, you know, if it wasn't right up under the chin, it was right by the helmet. I mean, those linebackers, one time that linebacker flew in there and hit him up by the helmet. So, you know, I think he is taking some shots, but they do have to do a better job of either play calling or the offensive line does have to do a better job, but they're going to blitz Michael Vick. And, I mean, if you're not going to leave more guys in the box to block, then you're gonna have some problems because they're gonna blitz him. They're blitzing him every week. I mean, if you put pressure on him, he's left the last couple games. So if I play them, I'm gonna put pressure on Michael Vick and blitz him and try to get him out of the game.
Right, and he's gonna get a lot of blitzes. And when you're blitzing a lot, you're gonna get hit a lot.
But Willie, I mean, but expand on this because I mean, you said you see the point. Michael Vick, yes or no, is an elite quarterback, and B, right now, I mean, if this is Peyton Manning, is Peyton Manning taking these hits?
I think Peyton Manning might get a little more favoritism towards some of the calls, but the problem is that when you throw the ball so much, you know, like you said, I mean, last year just seemed like he was getting rid of the ball. Everything was flowing better. It just seemed like things were clicking better. You got to get the ball out your hands, but he is taking a lot of hits. And the only problem I have with the ball is when you get a lot of hits up high in the head area, which they were hitting him up high last week. I mean, they were aiming at his chest, but they were hitting him right by the helmet, you know. And like Kerry Collins got hit with that hit, and they didn't throw the penalty, but then they find the guy. So basically, they're saying it wasn't an illegal hit when Ferrier hit him. I mean, Michael Vick took some shots, you know, right around the helmet area, or he was going down getting hit in the helmet area. And those aren't done by accident; they're done on purpose.
Jeremy had spoke about it early, Willie, and he talked about the officials possibly being dog lovers, and there could be a little backlash towards Vic because of the whole dog fighting situation. Do you think that's the case? Because I don't think that's the case.
Well,
what do you think?
I don't know, Jeremy, if there's a backlash toward the dog fighting thing. I mean, last year he got to play well. It might be a little backlash toward him getting 40-something million guaranteed. I think if people are upset, it's not as upset about Michael Vick coming back and playing football. I think they might be more upset about the fact that Michael Vick got paid all that money.
So, Willie, because
right.
I respect your can't. You've been very keen on the airwaves. You tell it like it is. And that's where I'm going with this. I think that there is an overwhelm.
Yeah.
I think it's very obvious to see people in the NFL do not want Michael Vick to have the success that he's having because of what he did. Whether it's right or wrong, to me, it's clear to see these officials watch him take these late hits. And, I mean, I think in the last 2 years, it has been a cry. The city of Philadelphia has cried out and said, watch this guy. You're going to get our franchise player injured. And the officials have not once ever even given him the benefit of the doubt. But when you brush up against a Peyton Manning, a Phillip Rivers, who, I mean, they haven't proven themselves. They don't like Michael Vick, and it's very apparent.
Well, I mean, Michael Vick isn't as big, so he falls down a lot. Peyton Manning is 6'5" and a half. Phillip Rivers is big. Tom Brady is big. They're bigger quarterbacks. So when you hit them, if you hit them low, or if you hit them kind of high, it's going to be looking more apparent because these guys are 6'5". Well, Michael Vick isn't as big as these guys, so, you know, maybe it doesn't look as big, bad, because Michael Vick's always moving around in the pocket. He's tried to stay in the pocket more this year, but I will agree with you. He's been hit a lot early in the season. But, some of that's got to do with protection, and some of that's got to do with the way they're doing it. I mean, you get a guy all this, you know, you make him your franchise quarterback. I mean, the man can't do everything on the field. I mean, he's an excellent athlete. He runs around, he scrambles around. But, I mean, Michael Vick, you know, was banged up at the end of the season last year. And now he's gone in three games, and he's hurt right now. So they're going to have to figure out something if they want Michael Vick to be there for the next 3-4 years, is my point.
And
because he's not going to make it like this, Paul.
I agree. I mean, there's no way he could make it this way. And he can't take that the type of beating that he's been taking throughout the season. And, Willie, do you see him getting through this season? I mean, do you think he'll miss more time, or do you think he'll be able to play the next 14 games, next 13 games, excuse me?
No, I think he'll miss more time. I don't see him making it through the season without missing more time.
Well, Willie, can I ask you, do you think that the Eagles here are being intelligent? It seems like they're letting a guy continue to week-to-week rehab himself, and especially at the quarterback position, and especially when they seem to be gunning for him. Should the Eagles be sitting him?
Could the Eagles be doing what?
Should they sit him? Should they try to get him?
Jeremy, it doesn't really work like that, man. Unless he just starts playing real bad when they give a guy $40 million guaranteed, man, they don't want to sit him.
Well, no, I know the economics, but I don't know. You see now, it's like he's going from one injury to the next. Started with a concussion, Now it's going to be the hand, and from the hand it will be. It's just.
Let's look back on it. In Atlanta, it was a 10-point lead when Michael Vick left the game. You got a 10-point lead on the road in the fourth quarter. You're supposed to win that game. So,
right.
I mean, if he doesn't get hurt in Atlanta, that was kind of a freak concussion, too, by the way. If he doesn't get hurt in Atlanta, the way he's twisted and hit the lineman's head, that wouldn't normally happen. But if he doesn't leave in the game in Atlanta, I think Philadelphia wins that game. I think they can win that game, and they lose that game, and they just go out last week, and they get beat. And they can be good. I mean, and I think in the fourth quarter, if they run the ball, they have control of that game, and they just lose it in the fourth quarter. So, like I said, you know, he's taking some shots. You would think he would get more calls at home. I would say that. I would say with some of those head shots close up to the head, you would think he would get some of those calls in Philly. So, that's where there is on the road, maybe it's not. But at home, we should get some of those calls.
But I think, you know, I said this before, Willie. I think Michael Vick is sort of similar to Shaq, and he's a hard guy to officiate. Shaq was very hard to officiate, and no one ever saw a player like Shaq, his size, his skill set, and his quickness, his agility, all that stuff. And we really haven't seen a quarterback like a Michael Vick in this league. I mean, is that what it comes down to, a possibility that the guy is just so hard to officiate that sometimes you're going to miss the ball?
Shaq was just a freakish athlete for his size. But like I said, Michael Vick isn't as big, though. So, I mean, yeah, he's a hell of an athlete, but he's trying to stay in the pocket more. You ever seen Michael Vick doing a lot of running around, scrambling, making those big, big plays this year like he's known to do in the past? I can't really compare him to Shaq, though, because Shaq was just a humongous man. I mean, like you said, it looks a little more obvious when Peyton Manning, who's almost 6'6", and Brady and Phillip Rivers, who are bigger guys, being Roethlisberger, and they haven't been making all the calls for being either, are getting hit because they're bigger guys. You know, I know they're pocket quarterbacks, but they're bigger people. So when it goes down, it looks worse. With Michael Vick's moving around and tumbling, you know, and falling down a lot more. So, I mean, I just think when they get close to your helmet, you know, it gets close to helmet combat contact, then sometimes it's got to be called. Just to warn the defense. Because if you let the defense launch at a guy and they're hitting him by the helmet and they're not calling it, they're going to keep coming.
And I guess the point I was trying to make with Shaq is, just they're hard guys to officiate. And going off what you're saying, maybe it's a lot closer to Allen Iverson and the type of contact he used to take. And, you know, he always felt that he should have got more calls.
I would compare him more to Allen Iverson than Shaq. I wouldn't compare him more to Shaq because he's so big. But I'm saying if he's launching, what Jeremy's saying, if he's launching, then the referee's got to throw a flag sooner or later, a warning shot. Look, you're getting a little too close. You need to back off,
right.
You know. So if they throw a 15-yard flag out there, that's going to make the defense think about it. But if they're not throwing any flags, then they're going to keep launching. That's
right.
You know, you got to warn them. You got to do stuff during the game to keep them to back off. But if these refs aren't backing them off at all, that's what Michael Vick's mad about. If they had threw a few flags at some of these early in some of these games, the concussion was a freak accident. That wasn't anybody's fault. But I'm saying,
right.
When they're launching at him toward his head, which they did some last week, they need to throw some warning shots to tell the defense, look, you're getting a little too close.
But is it
the kid, he just had a concussion last week, so, you know, they should be looking for them launching near his head because he's just coming off a concussion from last week.
Is it almost genius of Michael Vick what he did? Because now at this point, everybody will be looking. Everybody's going to be looking. So this might be a blessing in disguise for him.
Well, if the guy wants to try to make it through the year, he has no other choice. But it comes down to protecting better and executing better offensively. And that's what they got to do. They got to execute offensively better. And I mean, if you go, I know they got beat last week by the New York Giants. But if you go to Atlanta and you put up 30, you're supposed to win the game. If you got a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, you're supposed to win that game.
Definitely, definitely. And I thought, actually, in reality, I think the Eagles should be an undefeated, would be an undefeated team if Michael Vick was played the whole games, every game. They would have been an undefeated team. I think they would have beat the Falcons, and I also think they would have beat the Giants last week. Teams are benefiting from Michael Vick not playing, and I think the Falcons benefited, and I think the Giants benefited as well. And another guy, Willie, out there, Tony Romo, a guy who gutted through the game against the Redskins on Monday night, got it done. Has these past 2 weeks, have they changed anybody's feelings on Romo? You think everybody's starting to change on this guy, and they're starting to feel like, you know what, maybe this guy is a top-notch, get-it-done type of quarterback?
Well, I would say the 49er game really, really showed, you know, his toughness. The last week game was just real ugly. I mean, that game could have gone either way. Tony Romo made the play when he had to, but all the missed snaps and running after the ball and stuff like that. I mean, if that was a good football team, I don't think Dallas, a real good football team, they're going to take advantage of some of those situations. Then when they do have the game, you have a chance to win the game, you throw an all-out blitz and leave Bryant one-on-one with D'Angelo Hall. So that was a play that he scrambled and made a play. But, I mean, it was just some key plays in there where Grossman didn't make, and that game could have gone either way. But, yeah, Romo is a tough guy, and I like Romo, and I mean, offensively they got to get it together because they can't go out there and play against the Patriots, some of these good teams, and fumble snaps and do that stuff all game and think they're going to win it.
Definitely, and they benefited, like you said, from Rex Grossman's play, and that really helped them a lot. And, Willie, you have the Buffalo Bills now, 3-0 after beating the Patriots. I mean, they're getting solid quarterback play from Ryan Fitzpatrick. I still think, though, Willie, and looking at the Buffalo Bills, they're still the third best team in their division. Do you believe in the Bills? Can they win the AFC East?
It's going to get tougher as the year goes on. So we're gonna see how good they are. I don't know if they're third best. I would say maybe second best in the division. But you know, they got a gutty win. I mean, you can't be down every game, and they were down 21 last week and pulled it out. Well, you're not going to be able to keep pulling those games out. It's going to catch up with them. But you know, they're playing. They're 3-0. So until somebody beats them, we'll see what happens. But I don't have. You know, I wouldn't put them in the top five. I put them. You know, it's early, so I don't know if I put them in the top 10 teams in the league, but they are playing some gutty football. I mean, they went out and beat Kansas City on the road, so we can say that. But other than that, they've been down and had to fight back.
I agree with you that you can't in the second half of any NFL season, you're not going to win games coming back, but the game especially against the Patriots, does that not make this team, a legitimate threat? Maybe not this year, but certainly in the AFC East, as the heir apparent, if you will. They are young, they are extremely talented, and it seems like they just have a nose for winning.
They have a nose for the ball, and how many times are you going to pay Tom Brady and he's going to throw four picks? Some of those picks were tipped or up in the air in those situations. So, I mean, the Patriots' defense. I mean, they let them slice them and dice them some too. So, where's your boy Haynesworth been? Is Haynesworth playing this week, Paul or Jerry? I mean, come on.
At this point, I think he's still questionable.
He's back, whatever. I don't know. I don't know how much he's got left if he wants to play football. But what I'm saying is, so, you know, it's a combination of Tom Brady throwing four picks and then if you get Tom Brady throwing picks, I mean, we did 2-0-5. We did the same thing. We beat him at home, and I think Greg Wesley had two picks off Brady. He threw a couple of that game. But if you get to Tom Brady, he's throwing picks, and eventually, you know, like you said, the defense gave up some big plays. And I agree with Jeremy. I'll say they're young, they're exciting, they got a lot of talent, they got a lot, you know. If they keep these guys together, they're going to be a good football team, a real good football team.
Now you said Buffalo was the second best team in the AFC East. So So you think Buffalo is better than the Jets?
No. Well, you're right. I'll say third best.
Third best.
Yep.
And Willie, we look at Buffalo the next 5 weeks. I mean, after Cincinnati, they play Cincinnati, but after Cincinnati, they got the Eagles, the Giants, the Redskins, the Giants, and the Cowboys. So that should tell us a lot about this Buffalo team, Buffalo Bills team. Would you agree about that?
That will tell us a lot about the team.
Yeah, that's
and I don't have them in my top five. I don't have them in my top five teams. So I will. Yeah, I will say they're third best. You're right.
We'll get to your top five teams, Willie. But let's look at it now. Another team, the Detroit Lions, 3-0 comeback victory against the Minnesota Vikings. Again, I look at this team and I still say, just like the Bills, this is the third best team in their division. I don't think they're better than the Bears, and I don't think they're better than the Green Bay Packers. What are your thoughts on the Lions?
I don't agree with you. I think they could be better than the Bears. We'll see what happens. I think they're good. I think if you keep Stafford healthy and you got Calvin Johnson playing the way he's playing right now, and you got that defense, we don't even have Nick Farley back in that defensive front yet with the foot injury. I do think that team is gonna. I think they're very good. I think they're gonna surprise some more teams this year.
Okay, well, we'll see. And I mean, I look at their schedule as well. They have Dallas coming up next. They play the Bears after that. They got the Niners, the Falcons.
Has anybody stopped Calvin Johnson yet?
Not yet.
It's a little different between them and the Bills because they got a real stud receiver who can spray the field. They got best who can fly. You know, they got some serious athletes on that team. And the difference between them and Buffalo is when that defense on that team can turn it up on you. I think that defense can stop some people and they can do some more things. So I like Detroit. I really do like Detroit.
Well, but I would say this, Willie, and I will agree with you. I think their division, in terms of their division too, I think Chicago is not. They've always been. They're a paper champ, and I think that they could be the second best team in their division.
Yeah, I would say second to the team in the division, and I'll surprise you and say something else about them later on. But in that division because of Green Bay and Green Bay's Super Bowl champs. But I do really like Detroit now, and like you said, I think Detroit can make some noise this year. But you got to watch out for them. You got to keep Stafford healthy, and you got to protect him. But right now, watching the way him and Calvin Johnson are clicking this year, and Calvin's been a beast these first couple of weeks.
Well, yeah, I mean that catch he made in overtime was crazy, incredible.
Yeah.
But I think the only question that they have, and I think you will agree, is Matthew Stafford. But I mean, all appearances are he certainly can throw the football. He's certainly a young, bright quarterback, but. But again, I always look at these teams that are young and say you really have to wait until game 8. That's their real NFL season, second half of any season. When it's time to play in the NFL, when you can every week watch one less game.
You're right, and the games become more important and everything like that, but. I mean, if Detroit can stay happy, they're going to make noise. They start off 3-0. You know, if they can go into each, you go into four. So the next four they win two. If they can, if out of those 12 games, they can split, and they go 9-7, 10-6. You know, if they go 10-6, I think it's a good chance they make the playoffs. So. We'll see, and like you said about Chicago, how's Chicago gonna block them up front? So yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be tough for them to win in Chicago, but it's gonna be real tough for Chicago to come in there and beat those guys.
And Willie, the team that the Detroit Lions beat the other week, the Minnesota Vikings, they fall to 0-3. This is a team that's lost three second half leads the past 3 weeks against the Chargers. Against the Buccaneers and now against the Detroit Lions. They're messing with McNabb's mechanics at this point. Is it safe to say that the Vikings are done?
When you start off 0-2, it's going to be real tough, you know, to bounce back. I hope, like I said earlier, I would like to see McNabb, you know, play, you know, them to play better. I know Peterson's been running hard. You know, it's a tough deal. You know, they've had a chance to win those games. They just give it up at the end. And, you know, I haven't been watching the games fully, so I can't really say, you know, everything that's going on in those football games. But, you know, when they start questioning your mechanics, and you've been in the league for that long, then, you know, that's not looking too good. So we'll see if a quarterback change will help them. I don't know if that much that's going to help, but obviously they're not happy with Donovan.
I think it's safe to say at this point, if they lose maybe another and go 0-4, it's time to go to the rookie Christian Ponder and just to see what you have there, because at this point the season probably would be lost. And really, we look at it 3 weeks into the season, we have the Packers, we have the Lions and Bills who are undefeated. But who are Willie's top five teams after 3 weeks?
Okay, this is my list. I thought about this last night, and I got a couple teams that aren't undefeated in there, and I got to have the team that I chose to go all the way in there. I've got Green Bay number one.
Okay.
Baltimore number two.
Okay,
because I still think, and I know this is a quarterback driven league, but I still think that when it comes playoff time, you got to play some defense. You got to be able to stop some people, and some of these teams can't stop anybody. I've got New Orleans number three because of that, because of the fact that they're not playing defense.
And I knew you would put New Orleans in there.
I've got the Jets number four.
Okay.
And a surprise, Detroit number five.
Wow. And the Jets being number four is also a surprise that I didn't hear the New England Patriots.
Defensively, I mean, when you give up that many points, when you give it up defensively, I love New England right now this week. They got to play the Raiders. We're gonna see, because they got that boy, that 5-on-1 boy, Dan McFadden. We're gonna see what they do with that Arkansas boy. So I got to see the Patriots defense. I got to see something.
And you know you're gonna rep that Arkansas all day long.
Oh,
Tim, what do you think about my top five?
No. Well, I mean, well, Paul seems silly, but I think I will say this. If you're not going to include, I think New England, they have a very talented offense. I think their defense is not where it needs to be. But I also think, and I hate to say this because I'm not the biggest Tom Brady fan per se, but I certainly have a lot of respect for him. I think that he now is taking his game to that Joe Montana-esque level. He's at a different level. He plays at a different level than everyone around him. And they do have, it seems like from a passing perspective, with Les Welker, he knows how to get the ball to these players. And the NFL is, I think, it's a very weak NFL. So I wouldn't be surprised, unfortunately, if they do quite well.
Yeah, but eventually you got to run the ball. Eventually, it's going to be some tight games, and the Patriots used to be more of a balanced team and would run the ball. I mean, they always had Tom Brady throw the ball, but remember they picked up Corey Dillon when they made a run. They had Corey Dillon. They had another back before when they made those runs in the early 2000s. They ran the ball. I mean, you got to eventually run the ball. They got rid of that back they drafted, and they have Seven Morse. They have running back by committee now. But I think it's going to come a time where you got to run the ball more. And it puts, when you're throwing the ball like that, eventually the D coordinators, if they have the personnel, are going to have packages to disrupt you. And that's what Buffalo did to them last week. Those quarterbacks disrupted them, and Tom Brady had a bad game. You know, he threw four picks last year, threw four picks in one game. So that
right.
ultimately, the same thing that they've been winning by was the same thing that hurt them. And like I said, I understand that they want to do this, you know, pass happy league. But when it comes down to it, when the second half of the season, when they start trying to put teams away and stuff, they're gonna have to run the football and make an elite and keep those chains moving and keep the other team off the field.
Well, Paul, let's finish this and we can wrap that quickly. But I told you I won't agree that they need definitely. I told you there. I don't think their defense is anywhere near what it needs to be to get past the AFC Championship, and they have no running. I mean, I think you actually heard it. It's interesting when you watch that NFL documentary on Paul, the coach. His name is escaping me.
Belichick.
Sorry, he says it back in 2000. They've had this problem since 2009. I mean, they don't have a running game, and that's why they've had these frustrating seasons. But I will say this year, and it's only been three games. I think what they're going to do, if they can do anything smart, it's going to be the short dink and dunk. They're going to run the ball with a two-yard pass. And I will say out of the top, let's say, 10 tight ends in the league, they have two of the top 10, which I think Brady is, again, that's why I say transforming his game from having a player like Randy Moss and a player like Wes Welker now to Wes Welker and two premier young tight ends.
Yeah, but the difference is with Chad Johnson, Randy Moss stretched the field. They don't have if he didn't get going when he dropped that one bomb, they gotta have somebody to stretch the field. They got tight ends that can go short. They have Wes Welker underneath. They have that. But you gotta have that wrench. Somebody's gonna have to stretch the field.
And I think you're right. Chad Ochocinco has to be the guy to stretch it. Deion Branch did a little bit of that last season for the Patriots. But, Willie, I'd have to disagree with you. I think the Jets don't belong in that top five. I would put the Patriots in there instead of the Jets. And for the reason is quarterback play. Tom Brady, Mark Sanchez. Tom Brady, a much better quarterback.
Who's got the better defense?
Well, let's look at the Jets defense, at the Oakland Raiders. I mean, they ran the ball.
Well, the Raiders they went up to Oakland, and Oakland had a big game against them, and they played in Oakland's confines. Oakland's got a hell of an offense now. Oakland can score points. They scored points last year. So Oakland's a better football team scoring points. Oakland's defense hadn't played all that great this year so far.
Right.
But all these teams' defenses are. They scored a lot of points, and McFadden got loose on them last week. But I think the Jets have a better defense than the New England Patriots.
At this point, I think they do. But I think when you look at it, I think the offense that the Patriots have will overcome the lack of things that they have on the defensive side of football.
We'll see.
I don't believe
Mark
Sanchez.
We'll see that. We'll see later on in the season. But like I said, come later in the season and come playoff time, somebody's going to have to play some defense. A lot of these teams are going to be able to score some, move the ball, but somebody's going to have to play some defense.
And I definitely, ultimately, you're going to have to play defenses. And yes, defenses win championships, Willie, but good quarterbacks do too, and I think Tom Brady is a much better quarterback than Mark Sanchez, and I think that's why the Patriots will be a better team than the Jets. And Willie, good news for you, 2012 class of the Hall of Fame. You were one of 103 names. It will be whittled down to 25 in November. You were a finalist last year. I mean, but when you see your name on this list, does it still get you excited?
I heard about it. I didn't see the list, and like I said, anytime you're on that list to get a chance to go into that extremely high honor for football players, I'm gonna get excited. And the fact that I have Will Shields, who's up this year, who I played with, came in the draft with, and we were up for the Allen Trophy together in college, and had similar careers other than he played another year and he didn't miss a game, but he's up this year, and he looks like a real good candidate, and I'm excited about possibly having a chance to go in with him.
And we'll see what happens moving forward, Willie, but I don't think there's any doubt you will be at least a finalist this time around. It's just I mean, you were a finalist last year. We'll just see if you can get through this time around.
Yeah, we'll see. And it's going to be exciting to watch it dwindle down and see what happens. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And, you know, I'm looking forward to watching some football and seeing what happens with that.
And we'll see what happens this week, Willie. Willie, as always, it's a pleasure talking to you, man. And
anyway,
we'll
see what the Patriots can do with those Raiders this year out there. Since we saw what happened to the Jets, and the Jets got ran through. I mean, they did. They had a tough game, but hey, the Raiders are a very, very good football team.
They're playing some good football right now, and like you said, your 501 boy is also getting it done in tournament fashion. Willie, greatly appreciated, sir.
All right, y'all have a good one.
All right.
Take care, Will.
The great Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler, one of the 103 Hall of Fame finalists in this 2012 season. And Jeremy, we're going to bring in shortly now a guy that – as a part of a big-time situation in Buffalo. Drayton Florence will be joining us very shortly now. The Bills are 3-0, a big-time victory against the New England Patriots, and Drayton Florence was a big part of that. That big interception return for a touchdown that put the Bills up 31-24. It was a big play. The Bills, no one circles the wagon like the Buffalo Bills. They are 3-0, and we'll see what happens moving forward, but they are a surprise, and they're getting some great quarterback play from Ryan Fitzpatrick. Big-time quarterback play from him. He's really getting it done. The Bills are getting it done. You look at it, though, defensively, they may have to step it up a little bit, 24th against the pass and 24th against the rush. But hopefully, moving forward, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, they can shore that up a little bit because they're playing some good football right now. They came back 21-0 against the Patriots, 21-3 against the Raiders. This team has come back and come back again, and we'll see if they can keep it up throughout this whole season. How do you feel about the Bills right now, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, no. You heard me, you know, talking to Willie. I think I'll say this. They certainly have excited me, and I'm not a Buffalo Bills fan, but I hate New England Patriots, and to watch them, you know, beat the Patriots made me at least look at them. And I think it's interesting. I talked last week. I was a little bit, I don't want to say down on Fitzpatrick, but I said I didn't think that the Brett Favre comparisons are even warranted this early in anyone's career. And I don't like any comparisons like that, but, you know, they're going to happen. But I think as I was saying to Willie, and I think they're in a difficult division, and to play twice a year against some of the teams they're going to play against, including New England, but most importantly, I think the Jets, the number one team in that division, with a great quarterback who I like a lot, I think they're going to be challenged. They're going to be challenged. I like them, Paul. I think it's not going to be this year. I think I told you. I think they're going to wind up either 9-7 or 8-8 because I think you're going to see them fall. I agree with Willie at the end of the year, but I think next year teams better watch. They're very, very young and extremely talented.
Well, let's bring him in now. Let's bring in now cornerback for the Buffalo Bills, Mr. Drayton Florence. Drayton, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing well. And Drayton, let's get right down to it. Down 21-0 in the second quarter to the New England Patriots. Granted, last week you guys came back against the Oakland Raiders, but these are the Patriots, a team that's beaten you 15 straight times. Being down 21-0, what was the mood on the sideline?
You know, it was frustrating, but, you know, at the same time, you know, during the course of a ball game, each team is going to make their run. The Patriots came out hot early, went down and scored on the first drive, got an interception, and went down and scored again. So, you know, when you're playing a playoff caliber team like the Patriots, each possessions count, and, you know, they made theirs count the first two times. They went down and scored real quick. Obviously, that's not the way we want to start a game, but, you know, there's four quarters to play. You know, they pretty much won the first quarter and first and second quarter, and we won the second and third and fourth quarter. And, you know, just closed that deficit after halftime and, you know, just kept plugging away like we always do.
And you guys kept plugging away, and ultimately you tied the score at 24. And then, Drayton, you made a big play. Take us through that big play.
Well, we were in a cover two, and, you know, Marcel got some pressure up the middle, and the ball deflected off his helmet, and, you know, I was in the right place at the right time, and, you know, I was able to outrun Tom Brady in the O-line and get in the end zone for a score.
And is that a D-back dream?
Oh, yeah. I always want to get an interception anytime the ball's in your area. But to go back for a touchdown, go-ahead victory, go up. We went up 7 with that score. You know, it felt great. And, you know, I'm just happy that my defensive line, you know, got pressure on the quarterback, and I was able to capitalize on the deflection.
And, Drayton, you guys, Tom Brady, I mean, four interceptions, you forced four interceptions from Tom Brady. I mean, what made you guys so effective against Brady?
Well, at first, you know, we weren't as successful, but, you know, once we settled down and went into halftime and made our adjustment, you know, we were able to, you know, do some good things out there. It all started when, you know, Brian Scott got the interception at the end of the first half, and, you know, they just kept coming on after that. George Wilson made a nice play. Leotis McKelvin also had a nice interception, and, you know, we were just able to capitalize off of his mistakes, turn them into points, and, you know, come out with the victory.
We're talking to Drayton Florence, cornerback for the Buffalo Bills. And Drayton, again, the Patriots would come back. They would tie the score at 31. Did you still have confidence that you guys still would win that ball game at that point?
You know, we always have confidence, man. I just, you know, just don't like the way we started that game. Obviously, we don't want to, you know, have to come from behind each time we go into halftime. But, you know, our character as a team is, you know, we're a blue-collar team. We're going to fight to the end. And, you know, no one was over there on the sideline pointing the fingers. No one gave up. You know, we all stayed the course. And, you know, we weathered the storm and came out with a good victory.
And let's go to the end of that game. Ryan Lindell hits the big field goal. What was the reaction on the bench? And what was your reaction when you saw the football go through the uprights and you know you had won the ball game?
It was a great feeling, man. It was a, you know, a feeling of, you know, that's what we sought out to do. We accomplished our goal. And also, you know, for the past 15 wins that the New England Patriots, you know, had up on us, you know, it's time to bring that to an end also.
And you brought it to an end, and mainly because of quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, the guy is playing some big-time football now. I mean, a lot of people are surprised by his play, but as a teammate, are you surprised by what he's doing right now?
No, not at all. I mean, I practice with Ryan, you know, day in and day out, so I knew what he was capable of doing. It was just a matter of him getting his opportunity and, you know, making the most of it, which he's done thus far. Granted, it's only been 3 games, but, you know, if he continues to play the way he's playing, you know, he'll probably have a Pro Bowl-type season.
And so far, so he's doing very well, and playing some great football. And you talked about you guys got the victory. Talk about the crowd in Buffalo on that day. Was that the loudest you ever heard of?
Yeah, man, that was the loudest I ever heard it. And after I got that interception for a touchdown, man, it sounded like a jet, you know, flew over the top of the stadium. It was so loud. I mean, we got the best fans in football. They're here on Friday afternoon, filling up the parking lot with the RVs. And, you know, when you're driving into Orchard Park on Sunday morning, you know, it's a cloud of smoke from all the people out tailgating so early, man. So, you know, it's great to have good fans, and then it's great to have, you know, fans that enjoy the game and understand the game. And, you know, when we're out on the field on defense, they really get rowdy, and that's starting to help us out, man.
And you look at it right now, Drayton, you guys are 3-0 on top of the AFC East. I got to be honest with you, going into the season, when I talk to AFC East, I talk Jets and Patriots. But at this point, can we add the Bills to that equation now?
Well, we've been in the AFC for a while, so I don't see why not talk about us. You know, nobody's expectations on us before the season were high, except for the guys in the locker room. And, you know, that's fine with us. You know, we don't have a problem with that. You know, the past few years, our records have indicated, you know, that we haven't been where we needed to be in the win column. But, you know, that's all in the past. All I can say is we're 3-0 now. And we got a great opponent coming in this week in Cincinnati, and hopefully we'll be, you know, 4-0 after this thing pans out.
And let's talk about the Bengals. I mean, again, you guys coming off a big emotional victory, and you have the Bengals next. I mean, how do you guard against letting down against the Bengals?
Well, just stay in focus, you know. That's what we need to do. You know, we respect our opponents each week, each weekend, and week out. We're going to prepare. We're going to be ready to go out and battle. You know, like I said, we got a great opportunity to go out and make some more plays this week. And, you know, I think our team will be ready once Sunday gets here.
Talking to Drayton Florence, cornerback and one of the heroes of the Bills' big victory against the New England Patriots last Sunday. And after the Bengals, Drayton, you guys have five tough games after that. You got a tough five-game stretch. You got the Eagles, you got the Giants, you got the Redskins, you got the Jets, and you got the Cowboys. After those games, do you think that'll tell a lot about the Buffalo Bills?
I think so, man. But we're just going to take it one week at a time, one opponent at a time. We're not going to get ahead of ourselves, and, you know, we're not going to predict anything down the future. All we can do is, you know, control what we got in this week, and that's getting ready for Cincinnati, and, you know, that's how we're going to approach it.
And, Drayton, it's a great time for you. I mean, you're off to a pretty good start, two interceptions in the first three games. Your Bills are 3-0. And you're also doing some great things in the community right now. You got a raffle going on for the military. Talk about that.
Yeah, we have a raffle going on. What it is, it's two round-trip tickets via JetBlue to the Buffalo Bills versus the Philadelphia Eagles football game here in Orchard Park. And also the hotel accommodations will be paid for. The raffle is only $10 for a chance to win that. And, you know, the money is going to be going into my foundation, the Drayton Florence Foundation. And, you know, we're making a special program where we're supporting the military families in the community that, you know, may have one parent or both parents, you know, serving our country overseas right now. So we're going to have a special holiday program for those kids and families just to, you know, show them how much we appreciate, you know, what they do for us day in and day out, and that's fighting for our freedom, you know, overseas right now. You know, those are the true heroes. What we do is very minute, you know, and compared to those soldiers putting their lives on the line each and every day.
And Drayton, again, man, I said it last time you were here, but you're doing a great job in the community, and I got to applaud you, man. All I can say is keep it up. Keep doing what you're doing.
I appreciate it, man. And once again, that raffle's website is www.gamedayraffle29.com. You can go on there.
And even if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan, I mean, if you want to see your Eagles in Buffalo, this is a great opportunity.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. I mean, where else can you win two round-trip tickets and, you know, two tickets to the NFL game and, you know, your hotel's paid for $10. So, you know, it's a great cause. You know, the support so far has been good. And, you know, hopefully we can continue that.
And everybody, please make sure you go to GameDayRaffle29.com. That's GameDayRaffle29.com. And even if you don't win, you're supporting the troops, and that's a beautiful and a great thing.
Exactly.
And where can we find information about your foundation and what's going on with the foundation?
You can go right on the website, DraytonFlorenceFoundation.com, and you know, you can find everything that we're doing and stay up to date with what's going on with me and the Bills. And also stay up with the Twitter timeline that I got going there.
Drayton, greatly appreciated, man. Glad you could take some time out for us, man. Nothing but the best of luck in this 2011 season. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, man. Let's do it again soon.
Drayton Florence, cornerback for the Buffalo Bills. And, again, the Buffalo Bills are off to a 3-0 start. But make sure, again, you go to GameDayRaffle29.com. That's GameDayRaffle29.com. And, you know, Drayton Florence is doing some great things on the field. He's doing some great things off the field. He's supporting the troops, and that's a beautiful thing. I mean, the troops, like he said, they are the true heroes, the real heroes out there. I mean, they are supporting us. They are making sure that we're okay here in America. So make sure you go to GameDayRaffle29.com. That's GameDayRaffle29.com. And also, if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan, this might be an opportunity for you to go down to Buffalo and watch the Philadelphia Eagles. So, and again, it's only $10. It's only $10, so it's an opportunity to go down and see the Bills in Buffalo, free hotel stay, free flight. I mean, you can't beat that. $10, who knows, your name could be chosen. And even if you don't win, like I said before, if you don't win, guess what? You supported a great cause, and that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And, again, kudos to Drayton Florence. Kudos to what he's doing. And, again, GameDayRaffle29.com, where you can find out about the raffle and support some of the great things that Drayton Florence is doing in the community. The second hour of Go For It starts now. Go For It. In that first hour, we were joined by Drayton Florence of the Buffalo Bills and the great Willie Rofe. In the second hour, we're going to be joined by a friend to the show, boxer Devin Alexander. He has some big news. He has signed with Golden Boy Promotions, and he's going to be fighting at 147 of welterweight division, where that's the home of Manny Pacquiao, the home of Floyd Mayweather Jr., the home of Andre Berto, the home of Amir Khan at some point. So a lot of big names in the welterweight division, and we're going to talk to Devin Alexander about that, and looking forward to talking to Devin. We talked to him last time before his fight, after his fight, actually, with Lucas Matisse. And he actually was in Vegas for the Floyd Mayweather fight, and he was sitting ringside, so he saw the fight. So we're going to get his take on that as well. But yesterday, the start of the Major League Baseball playoffs, the Yankees game against the Detroit Tigers was rained out, suspended, I should say. They're going to pick it up today in the Bronx. And also you had the Tampa Bay Rays, a team that many thought wouldn't even be in these playoffs, a team that it was a mad dash to the finish, but they got into the playoffs, and they beat the Texas Rangers actually yesterday 8-0, an impressive performance by Matt Moore, the pitcher for the Rays, and they're off to a good start there. But could they be like the Giants, the San Francisco Giants, a team that got hot near the end of the season and got themselves to the World Series? Could the Rays be that team, or could it be the St. Louis Cardinals, a team, again, that got hot down the stretch and beat out the Atlanta Braves last day of the season, last night of the season, and they got into the playoffs? So let's start with the Cardinals and Philly series, which gets underway today at Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia. You look at it, in my mind, when you talk National League Baseball, you got to talk to Philadelphia Phillies. And I just cannot see – I guess I can see it because the Cardinals did win the season series, but those last three games, the Phillies really weren't playing for anything. But you look at it, the Cardinals have won the season series against this Philadelphia Philly ball club, and the Cardinals are a team, again, that's been hot down the stretch. But they're going to be at a disadvantage when it comes to pitching and starting pitching. I mean, let's be honest, Halladay, Lee, Hamels, Oswalt, all you need to say. I think any team is going to be at a disadvantage when it comes to playing the Phillies and when it comes down to pitching. But you look at it, Chris Carpenter, their ace, he pitched coming off 106 pitches against the Houston Astros, so he's unavailable for game one. So they're going to throw out Kyle Loesch, former Philly Kyle Loesch. So you got to say the Phillies are definitely at an advantage there, and especially with Roy Halladay going on the mound. But you look at it, the Cardinals, they're struggling with some injuries. Matt Halladay has a hand injury. You got Rafael Furcal, the shortstop, with a hamstring. So, I mean, you have to say, you look at this series, I don't really see any way the Cardinals can win here. I think the Phillies, I mean, they struggled there down the stretch. They lost 8 straight, but they came back against the Braves, swept a 4-game series. And 4 games that meant nothing to them, but they meant a lot to the Atlanta Braves, and the Phillies just went in there and handled their business. That's a sign of a championship-caliber team. That's a sign of a team that is going to get it done and fight to the finish, and they fought to the finish, winning 102 games. I cannot see any way the Cardinals win this series, and I like the Phillies to sweep it. I like the Phillies in 3. Jeremy, how do you view this one?
Oh, I don't see it sweep, but I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think the only reason I say that is I will say I think the Cardinals could be dangerous, but they're a veteran team, and they will. I mean, I think they're going to go down without a problem. This sort of team, I think right now, especially right now, they're just too talented to lose these kind of games.
And they, like you said, I mean, the pitching. I mean, you look at the Phillies, the bullpen, you could have some questions about that. There's definitely some questions about that. Antonio Bastardo, a guy that was money for them throughout the season, has struggled down the stretch. Brad Lidge, we'll see how much he has. He's going to be a setup guy as well. And Mike Stutz is a guy who struggled as well. So the bullpen, there are some questions, but Madsen, the closer, Ryan Madsen, if you can get to the closer, I think you should be fine. And hopefully the Phillies, if you're a Phillies fan, they can get the pitching that they need necessary to get very far and ultimately to win this series. But again, you like the Phillies in four, and I like the Phillies to sweep it. I think it's just going to be too much. And granted, the Cardinals are a hot team right now, but I think the Phillies are on another level when it comes to their pitching. And their pitching is just ridiculous. Anytime you can throw out Roy Halladay, Cole Hamels, Cliff Lee, and Roy Oswalt, anytime you can throw those four guys to the mound, you're going to be at an advantage. And even Vance Worley, their fifth starter, was a beast this year for the Phillies. So I just think the Phillies, it's a World Series or bust for the Phillies. They built this roster to win now, and I think they will win. Now, another series now in the National League, you got the Diamondbacks against the Milwaukee Brewers. Again, you look at it, this is a Brewers team. They can hit. They can flat out hit the ball. Prince Fielder, Ryan Braun, these guys can hit the ball. And you look at the Diamondbacks, they come in there with Ian Kennedy, 21-game winner. And a guy, you know, that's their money pitcher. That's the guy that's gotten it done for the Arizona Diamondbacks. But, again, I think it's going to be too much Prince Fielder, too much Ryan Braun. And I like the Brewers to win this series, and I like them to win this series in four. I like the Brewers in four here. But you got to watch out for the Diamondbacks in terms of their starting rotation of Ian Kennedy and what he brings to the table. But I have to say, I really do like the Milwaukee Braves. I think they've done some nice things with their bullpen. They bring in K-Rod. They also bring in J.J. Putz, a guy who's done well for them. So I really do like the Milwaukee Brewers here. I really do. I do like the Brewers here to win this series. I don't think the Diamondbacks can get it done. I just think it's going to be too much Prince Fielder, too much Ryan Braun, and I think ultimately the Milwaukee Brewers will win this series, and they ultimately, again, they will lose to the Phillies and the NLCS. I don't think there's any way that the Phillies can lose in these playoffs. It's just too much. It's just too much, too much, too much, too much, too much. Too much for Philly. Too much. It's just way too much.
Want to say it again?
Too much, too much, too much, too much, too much. Too much. Too much.
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, a lot actually now, and I'm sure you see that, but a lot's being made, you know, I think about this Brewers team. I totally agree, A, that the way you portrayed this series is how it will work. But I will say, offensively, if you are this, you know, Phillies team, I don't think it's a bad idea, and I don't think you should look past the Cardinals by any means, but don't sleep on this Brewers team.
And I agree with you. Go ahead.
I think, actually, Paul, I will say, I mean, they remind me actually a lot of the World Championship team, you know, from the Phillies. I mean, Prince Fielder, I think, is one of the brightest young, I mean, not that he's super young, players in the game. I mean, I think he's on Ryan Howard's level, if not, I actually would think could be with a team like the Phillies a notch above him. Because let's not forget, Ryan Howard is not exactly, Paul, he doesn't exactly do well in the playoffs.
Well, Ryan Howard, I mean, he has some struggles in the playoffs, but Ryan Howard is the reason the Phillies get to the playoffs every single year. Every single year. His play is the reason the Phillies get it. And the man always has a hot September. He always has a hot September. So I think he is the reason the Phillies get to the playoffs. But I think Ryan Howard is a beast, a flat-out beast. And I don't think there's any way you look at it. I don't think there's any way that the Brewers can beat the Phillies. I don't think – I can't see it. I don't think there's any way that can happen. I talked about J.J. Putz. J.J. Putz is actually the closer for the Arizona Diamondbacks. So I mixed that up. But you look at it, I think Milwaukee adding a K-Rod, that's a big acquisition, a guy who was a big-time closer for many years and it's a big-time setup man for the Brewers. So I liked K-Rod in that spot for the Milwaukee Brewers. But, again, I think the Brewers get it done. And I think they get it done in four. And I think they will face the Phillies in the NLCS. And I think ultimately the Phillies will take it from there. You look, go to the AL now, the Yankees and the Detroit Tigers. And I think this is a series now where if you're the Detroit Tigers, you have an advantage with Verlander, a 25-game winner, a guy who's done it all for the Detroit Tigers. They've done it all. They have flat-out done it all for the Detroit Tigers. He has done it all for the Detroit Tigers. And Verlander is a guy that, you look at it, gives the Tigers some advantage, especially if he can get two games in. But with that game being suspended yesterday, Verlander may not be able to get another game in this series. He won't be able to get two games. He may start – he'll start game three for the Detroit Tigers. That's what it's looking like, game three he'll start. But you look at it, that might be an advantage Yankees there, being that Verlander probably won't be able to start two games in the series. And also you look at it, if you look at it with this whole rainout thing, A.J. Burnett might be pitching for the Yankees, which could be an advantage for the Detroit Tigers. But I look at that Yankees lineup, and it's murder. Granderson, Cano, I mean the lineup is Teixeira. I mean, that lineup is a big-time lineup, a big-time lineup for the New York Yankees, and it's going to be a murderous-type row. It's a murderous-type row for the Yankees, and I just don't think the Tigers will have enough here. I like the Yankees to win this thing in four. That lineup is too good, and I think they'll get the necessary pitching from Sabathia and those boys. I just think the Yankees will win the series in four. How you see the series, Jeremy?
Well, so we're two for two. I mean, I'm not. You seem to. It seems like as we go down the line of every team, and again, following into the Paul Gant, Fairweather, Philadelphia guy, you don't seem. You seem to be putting this Yankees team. It seems like, and I could be wrong, but it seems like on top. And you know, I think they're very talented. But about this Yankees team. I do think, they've been here before and Girardi and they have, you know, all cylinders clicking. But their pitching staff, when you look at, there's been times, Paul, where you know as well as I do, especially even last postseason, you have to look at the postseason, not the actual season. And they can falter very quickly. And, you know, if they lose not in the first series. This series is going to be fine. Like I said, I agree with you completely. But I think that if they get down or they get challenged, that they're not. This is not and has not been their deepest team.
And I just think right now you look at it with the whole situation. I just like the Yankees here. It's just too much talent there. That lineup is just it's tough. It's a tough lineup, a very, very tough lineup. So. I like the Yankees there to win the series. I like the Yankees to win it in four, and I think the Yankees will go on and get to the World Series. And you look at it, the Rays and the Rangers, game one was a wash. I mean, it was a blowout for the Tampa Bay Rays. Again, this was a team that down the stretch there got hot. The Red Sox faltered, and this team kept coming, and ultimately they got themselves into the playoffs on the last day of the season. They won game one, 8-0, very impressive performance from the pitching, the great pitching. Matt Moore gets it done big time for them, shuts down the Texas Rangers, and he got it done. big-time fashion. Give him a lot of credit. Kelly Shopik hit two big-time home runs. Johnny Damon also got in there to the mix with a home run. So you look at it. The Tampa Bay Rays, they won game one. And game two, they have James Shield on the mound against Derek Holland of the Texas Rangers. Again, I like the Rays here. And I like them for a simple fact that they're playing some good baseball. And I think that's going to carry them through the series. I really do. And I like the Tampa Rays to win this thing in four. I like them to win it in Tampa. Again, I think they're going to. It's going to be because they're a hot team. I think that they're going to take this hot streak into the playoffs. They took it in game one, 8-0, and I think they're going to keep going and keep moving. And ultimately, I think, again, this team will play the Yankees in the ALCS. How do you view this series, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, today must definitely be a full moon because it's – well, I mean, I think that some of these playoff series are somewhat predictable, and I, as I say, I agree. I'm not going to – this isn't a series I'm going to focus a lot on, but I give you credit. You are a master prognosticator, so I will stick with you.
So you like the Rays to win this series in four?
Yeah, I mean, and then again, that's why I say, Paul, I will tell you, not that we certainly don't want to jump ahead, but I think that the Rays actually are a team that I think can give the Yankees some problems, just like I think that Milwaukee could give Philadelphia some problems. I think not that I'm saying that predict two upsets, but I say I think what the Rays – where, again, that's that lightning in a bottle. I think they feel very good walking into the playoffs. Not happy to be there. I think they feel that they belong to be there.
And we'll see moving forward. But again, baseball, the second season has begun. And it's going to be interesting as always. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens in this playoffs. But I think in the National League, I think we're going to see a collision course between the Phillies and Yankees, a rematch from the 2009 World Series. But I think with the Phillies, with this pitching, this team was put together to win the World Series, and I think they're going to win this World Series. And I think the Phillies, ultimately, when it's all said and done, will be the World Series champion of this 2011 team. Too much pitching. Pitching, 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 and more pitching. Pitching wins championships, and it's just too much pitching. Too much pitching. Too much pitching. And I really like the Philadelphia Eagles to get it done and ultimately to win the World Series. Jeremy, who do you like to win the World Series?
Well, you know, I'm going to say I love, and I really do, I certainly love the Phillies. I will say I differ from your vantage point a little bit. I think their pitching will certainly propel them. I hope this is the offseason. Not a hope, I actually think this is going to be an offseason that they're offensively going to surprise a lot of people. And I say that because I think because their pitching won't put them in, you know, 5-7 games, won't put them in 4-6 games. I think that when you look at, you know, that the Phillies can definitely day in, day out produce 3-4 runs. And I don't think they have maybe one pitcher in their lineup that will give them the possibility of getting above 3 runs in a game. And it the postseason for teams that have great pitching like this, and you know that, Paul, the postseason here can be very short. They can walk in and out of series in sometimes, for example, this one, in 3 games. It can be very, very short, so it can give them a lot of life.
And we shall see moving forward as we go on in this playoff series, I mean, in these playoffs, and I look at it, I mean, I did pick the Yankees, but I could see the Tigers with Verlander possibly pulling the upset. I could see it. I don't think it'll happen, but I can see it. And so we'll see who's that hot team. And, you know, the Cardinals could be that hot team that comes in these playoffs and possibly could surprise the Phillies. And possibly, who knows, get to the World Series. I mean, last year the San Francisco Giants were a team that got hot down the stretch, but they had the pitching. They definitely had the pitching. With Lincecum and Kane and those boys, they had the pitching. They had the bullpen with Brian Wilson. They had the pitching. They had the pitching. And so that was enough for them to get by the Phillies in the NLCS and ultimately get by the Texas Rangers in the World Series. So, you know, we'll see. The Cardinals could be that team. I don't think they are. And the Rays, they could be that team as well. And I could see it. I can see it, but I don't think it'll happen. I think that, you know, you look at
it. Well, let me ask you this. You know, and that's what I say. I mean, are you that sold on this? You're really that sold on this Yankees team this year?
I'm sold. That lineup is just crazy. It's just absolutely crazy.
The pitching
has been a little up and down. The pitching definitely has been up and down. But people forget, I mean, C.C. Sabathia is a beast. He's a horse. He is a horse. And you still have Mariano Rivera. You still have him.
What does that mean, though, Paul? I mean, you have, but they have a lot of players, you know, that they have a roster of players. I mean, just because they have the playoff experience,
Mariano Rivera is still a top-notch closer. He's still a top-notch closer.
You know, Paul, I think this postseason will tell you how much of a closer or how much of a top-notch closer he is in today's world. And I mean that, Paul. I think for you to go out there and say he's a top-notch closer, the only question that we say is, well, let's see if he can do it now.
And, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I think he can. I think he will. And that Yankees lineup is going to be tough for any team to beat. That's a tough lineup. It's going to be tough for any team to beat in terms of the pitching. It does after Sabathia it doesn't get a lot better. So there is an opportunity for a ball club there. But after you look at it, I don't know. I mean, I just think with what they have there, I think this team will get it done against the Detroit Tigers. And ultimately, I think this team will get to the World Series, but I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised if the Tampa Bay Rays are the team that make it to the World Series. You look at the Yankees, we talked about their pitching staff. I mean, Sabathia is a 19-game winner. You got Ivan Nova, 16-game winner, a guy that has stepped on the scene for the Yankees. And then you got a Bartolo Colon that's there. You also got an A.J. Burnett who's been shaky throughout this season. I mean, so there are some holes in terms of his pitching staff for the Yankees. There are definitely some holes there. And, you know, there's no doubt about that. No doubt about that. And you talked about Mariano Rivera, but he still had 44 saves this season for the New York Yankees. Still 44 saves for that young man. He's an older gentleman now, but he's still pitching like a young man. So, I mean, I just think you look at it, the Yankees, with that lineup, I think we'll get him through. But like you said, after Sabathia, you know, I mean, they have a young guy in Nova. A guy has pitched very well for this ball club, but can you trust him in these playoffs? Can you trust him? I mean, he's only 24 years old. So, I mean, he's young. Can you trust him? And that'll be the big question. That'll be the big question.
Though, Paul? But what are their alternatives?
There are no alternatives. I'm just saying, you got to trust him.
Exactly.
You got to trust them. There are no alternatives. You got to trust them. But I really do think when it's all said and done, the New York Yankees will get back to the World Series, and I think they will be facing the Philadelphia Phillies, a rematch of the 2009 World Series. And I think ultimately the Philadelphia Phillies will get revenge, and I think the Philadelphia Phillies will win the World Series in six games. Five games, actually. And that's the way I see it. But again, we shall see. That's why they play the game in baseball. Sometimes, like hockey, you can ride that hot pitcher just like you can ride that hot goaltender, and you can go very, very far. We'll see what happens in these playoffs. And I want to switch gears now to the NBA, and the lockout is still going strong. And you look at it, something big could happen in terms of Kobe Bryant. I mean, all things are pointing to that Kobe Bryant will be playing in Italy if there is a lockout. He will be playing in Italy if there is a lockout. And I'm surprised by this. I mean, I said throughout this whole lockout, I mean, there was a lot of talk of guys possibly going overseas, Dwight Howard to China. You heard some of that talk. And the talk, and you had Darren Williams, he's going to Turkey if there's a lockout. But I never thought a guy like Kobe Bryant would do this. I really did not think he would do this. And I understand, you know, he wants to continue to play, and I know he grew up in Italy. So Italy is home for him. Italy is home for him. But you look at it. You look at it. I mean, if Kobe Bryant goes to Italy making $3 million, I don't know if it's really worth the risk, to be honest with you. I mean, you look at it, he's going in that league making big-time money. Making big-time money. And no one in that league is going to be making the same type of money Kobe Bryant's making. He's making $3 million basically for however long, you know, for possibly 10 games. $3 million for possibly 10 games. Nobody in the Italian league is making that type of money. So you look at it. You look at it. Kobe Bryant could be a marked man. He could take a lot of hard fouls. Guys could be out there trying to injure a guy like Kobe Bryant. I don't think it's a smart move for Kobe. He has 3 years left on an $83 million contract with the Lakers. I just don't think it's a smart move for him. I really don't. 33 years old, he's getting older. Got to conserve that body, I think, a little bit. And that's a body that's played a lot of games over the years, especially a lot of playoff games. I mean, you're talking about guys probably played 100-plus games for most of his career. And then that includes the playoffs, finals, and all that. So you look at it. I don't think it's a smart move for Kobe to go overseas. I don't really think it's a smart move for anybody in the NBA, if I'm a star, to go overseas. I really don't. But could it be a leverage situation? Could be a leverage move, possibly. Who knows? But I just think, you know, I don't think it's smart.
You don't think, Paul, you don't think this is not, I mean, and I will take it, and you've talked about this, and I believe it now, more than ever. You don't believe that. I think this is Kobe doing, I'll use the term, a personal favor for the players union, because he gets the media attention that no one else gets, and he always will. And for Kobe to go play, or the threat of Kobe going to play overseas, makes it so real. And I agree with you, the economics behind this is a joke. I mean, even if they can get him, what's the point? You're going to lose money or break even. And for Kobe Bryant to even think he's going to risk, you know, his career over $3 million, I mean, either he has a, you know, he's in some serious need for money, or, there's no way. I will say, Paul, to me it's clear. He's doing this for one reason, and one reason only, and that is because, you know, Kobe Bryant has to, he has to help this players' league is rest on his shoulders. No one else's.
But, I mean, I think, you know, that they're adjusting the schedule for this guy. They're paying this guy a lot of money. It could be a backlash from the other players. It definitely could be a backlash from the other players, and it can get physical for Kobe. Kobe could be going up for a dunk, and somebody could low-bridge him. I mean, I just don't think it's worth it for him. I really don't think it's worth it for this man. I really don't, especially at his age. A guy that some believe is slowing down a little bit. But granted, the guy did grow up in Italy. He did grow up in Italy. He lived there from the age of 6 to 13. You know, and so he's grew up there. He lived in Italy. He's fluent. He knows Italian very well. He knows it. So, you know, you're looking at it. I mean, this could be a guy that this gives him an opportunity to, in some respect, go home and play in Italy. This gives him that opportunity. But is it worth the possibility? I mean, if he does get injured over there, the Lakers could void his contract. Obviously, that would never happen, even if he got hurt. I don't think the Lakers would void his contract. But you look at it, I just don't think it's worth $3 million to go over there, possibly expose yourself to injury. And you know, you can't discount injury because, again, you know, they're adjusting the schedule for this guy. They're adjusting the schedule for him. And so that's big. So So you know, there could be a little backlash there, and he's making a lot more money than anybody would be making in that league. He's making a lot more money than a lot of people in that league. So you look at that, and that could mean backlash. That could mean backlash. I mean, $3 million for basically 35 to 40 days, or essentially 10 games. 10 games. $3 million. 10 games.
Well,
not
I mean,
too many
right.
people over there making that type of money.
But, Paul, you believe it?
Do I think it'll happen? I hope not. But at the same time, you look at it, it could be a blessing in disguise in some respect, because by him playing over there, maybe, or at least threatening to play over there, maybe it could force the NBA and its players to deal or come up with something. And I want to read something actually from a guy who's actually playing in Italy, Jumaine Jones, a guy who used to play for the Philadelphia 76ers, and this is actually on his Facebook page on Thursday of this week. He said it's crazy that Kobe Bryant has never played in Italy and probably will never play in Italy, and they have our schedule on hold to see if he comes to Italy so they can arrange for him to play in the biggest arenas. They just let anything happen over here. How can Kobe control a league he has never played in? And those are the words of Jumaine Jones. Now, could it? I'm just going over it all, going off of that. I mean, could it be some kind of backlash from the other players? They are adjusting the schedule for this guy. They're doing a lot of things for him to play. Could it be a backlash?
Well, maybe Jumaine Jones wants to reminisce about when he actually had again, Paul, when you actually have an NFL or NBA career. I guess in a way, I mean, I look at a lot of this, I want you to be honest, Paul, and look at a lot of this. You really think that there's as much that there's going to be as much interest in these NBA players? Their contracts are guaranteed. Many of them are abundantly overpaid to go even for 10 games to go over and play in this type of a league.
Again, it's just not worth it to me for any player to go over there. And I didn't think anybody would go over there, anybody of significance. I mean, Darren Williams is significant. But I didn't see it. I didn't see it happening, and it still may not happen. I mean, it's you know, the deal is not 100% sewn up, but it's close. It's close, and hopefully it doesn't even come to that. Hopefully they settle everything up with the NBA, and we don't even have to deal with all that. Hopefully. Let's bring in now the newest member of Golden Boy Promotion, Devin Alexander. Devin, how are you, sir?
What's going on, my friend? Oh, man, thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks
always
for coming on, man.
Always a pleasure to be on the show. Always a pleasure to be
definitely.
On the show.
Definitely, definitely. Devin, let's get right down to it. A lot of great things going on for you right now. As we said, you signed with Golden Boy Promotions. Why Golden Boy?
Yeah. Well, it was the best decision for my career. They got some of the best fighters in my weight class, which I'm moving up to 147. So they had some of the best fighters there that I think available right now. You know, I mean, if Don had the proper fighters and the power, then I would have stayed with him. But that was another reason why we didn't stick with Don. So Golden Boy got the upper hand right now. They on the move right now, and they got the best, you know, stable of fighters right now.
And you look at it, Devin, I mean, there has been talk of a welterweight tournament. Some of the main names in the mix, you got Maidana possibly, Paulie Malignaggi, Victor Ortiz, maybe Berto. What can you tell us about this tournament at this point?
Well, Richard Schaefer mentioned it to us when we was down there at the Mayweather fight. And we thought it was a good idea, excellent idea. You know, HBO, I think, is on board. I think they love the idea. So it's just all as a matter of everybody sitting down and, you know, coming up with a game plan and to make this work. You know, I got my own promotion, too, so it's a co-promotion.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I got the great promotions and Golden Boy Promotions. So we on the move.
And talk about great promotions.
Well, it was something me and my manager came up with, you know. My coach's been around the game for a long time dealing with Corey Spinks and all of that. He's been with some of the best promoters. He promoted fights himself. So he figured, you know, why you know, not promote when he know how to, and why not get a piece of everything, you know, because we've been, he knows what he's doing, he knows what he's capable of doing, so, hey, we decided to go that route too.
And that's a great, I think it's a great route for you guys, definitely a great route. Definitely a great route, and we'll see what happens moving forward. I mean, have you lined up any fighters yet for your promotion?
Well, we're looking, and you know, I think every promotion is wanting to sign nothing but the best. They want to sign, you know, a hard worker, and you know, a fighter that's going to be dedicated to the sport and love the sport just as much as the promotion. So, you know. That's what we're looking at. So we haven't searched none yet, but we're on the lookout.
And Devin, you know, this is, I think, a very increasing trend inside boxing. Something actually I think is long overdue, which is fighters who are, you know, certainly at a high level, such as yourself, getting involved and promoting younger fighters.
Right. I agree, 100%. You know, I think you're supposed to open the door for every fighter. You know, I think a fighter being a promoter will help a fighter more because he's been through the situation and he knows what he's going through. You know, he knows what the fighter's going through, you know, and I think it'll be a great fit.
And you look at it, Devin, right now, I mean, you and Paulie Malignaggi, you guys been doing a lot of talking with each other. You're doing a lot of talking in Vegas. Could that be your first fight at 147?
It's talking, but HBO doesn't want to buy, you know, Malignaggi. You know, they already told us that. They said they would rather see us fight Medina Alberto.
Okay.
Or possibly we're looking at Aiden, you know, the WBC number two ranked guy. He got the WBC silver title. He's finna fight, I think, in a couple weeks. We're looking at him because, you know, I'm ranked number one. Two in the WBC myself, under Floyd. So, you know, we just have to see what Floyd do with the belt.
And how do you think you shape up against a guy like Berto?
Well, Berto, you saw a lot of flaws when he fought Victor Ortiz, and you saw a lot of flaws when he just fought recently, his last fight. You know, he get hits a lot, and, you know, he just coming in and just throwing, I think, and no, you know, finesse with it. So I definitely know I could beat him easy and convincingly. Of course, you know I'm going to say that. You know, of course.
And how much moving up to 147, how much does that mean to you right now? I mean, you said, and I heard your manager say, you were struggling to make 140. How much does being at 147 really help Devin Alexander, the boxer?
It definitely helps. You know, I've been fighting 140, well, 139, in amateur since I was 15. You know, I've been fighting that weight all my life. And right now, I'm 24. You know, I got way more muscle on me now. So I got my man strength, I think. I'm growing into my man muscle, you know, and it's way harder to take off the weight. You know, these last couple of fights, I mean, you know, I used to lose weight easily. I mean, no problem. But this last, with the Mathis fight and the Bradley fight, it was very, very tough trying to make 140. And 147 is going to give me that extra, you know, energy that you guys been seeing into me, you know, so that'll help out a lot, tremendously.
Well, Devin, I mean, it's interesting. I think you had just said you're getting your man strength, and so do you see yourself now, because Paul and I were talking about before you came on the air, 147, I'm sure you're aware, is certainly the man's division.
Yes, definitely. I mean, that's the division I think everybody want to be at, you know. That's the money division. That's where all the big guns at, the big wigs. And I definitely want to be in that situation. I believe in my skill, and I think, you know, like I told you guys before when I was on here last time, I'm steady learning. Each fight, I'm steady learning, and I'm steady getting better, you know. I see the mistakes I make in each fight, you know. These last couple of fights, you know, not making excuses, they've been getting a 75% Devin, you know, not all the way 100% Devin because of the weight and all that. But
right,
with me moving up to 147, it's going to be more energy. You guys are going to see me more explosive. So I'm glad I'm at 147 right now.
We're talking to Devin Alexander, boxer and newest member of Golden Boy Promotions and also the newest member of the welterweight division. And Devin, you look at it, man. You were in Las Vegas for the Mayweather-Ortiz fight. You saw the fight. Do you think what Floyd Mayweather did, what was it dirty?
Man, you know what I think? You know, Victor's my me and Victor grew up together. We're tremendous friends, you know. But, you know, I don't know what Victor – why did he do that? Why did he try to headbutt Mayweather? You know, I think it was from frustration. He couldn't hit Floyd, so he took the headbutt route. I don't know what he was thinking, but, you know, and all in all, I think Mayweather was right. I mean, when I went back and looked at the fight, you know, Joe Cortez said, let's go. You know, they came together. Victor Ortiz tried to hug him again. I guess Mayweather gave him a little hug, but not. He shrugged him off. Then just, you know, got to fighting. So I believe it was fair, I think. What do you think?
Well, you were there at the fight. So when you saw that, did you find it? Were you thinking to yourself, what was going on here? I mean, you saw it.
Yeah, it was crazy. When I first saw it, I mean, it was crazy. I'm like, man, what just happened? You know, the crowd went crazy. I'm like, man. But when you sit back and just analyze, you like, Mayweather was in the right, and, you know, he was right for what he did.
Let me jump in because I'm excited now because this is something Paul and I have been talking about, and mm-hmm. you're a professional boxer, so Paul and I are not. Because that was my contention that, I mean, when you watch how aggressive that headbutt was, and mm-hmm. Mayweather took that headbutt, I think Mayweather had to be real hot and just was mm-hmm. waiting to pounce on him. And I think he saw that opening, and was it maybe what Mayweather, how he wanted to knock him out? Absolutely not. But I don't blame him one iota for catching him with a really good, clean, hard shot.
Right. Right, I agree. You know, when you look at it, you know, if it was me, I would have been trying to get back at him too myself. You know, I mean, and he had a big old gash. I mean, it was intentional. So, you know, I would have been hot too.
And at the end of the day, it's protect yourself at all times.
Protect yourself at all times. That is the truest statement ever.
But does this, you know, Devin, I think Ortiz, like you said, I definitely think that, you know, I think what you saw was frustration against a fighter like Mayweather. But
mm-hmm.
I really did feel like it almost, especially because of the after fight and with the Larry, that, and we want to get into that, but Mayweather was, in my opinion, really given a raw deal here because that was, and you were there, and you used the great words. I mean, Paul and I watched it at home. I liken that to the Tyson, you know, event. That was mm-hmm. one of the most peculiar scenes you're going to see in any professional sport in a long time.
Most definitely. You can't even get those moments. You know, they come like every once every 10 years or something.
Right. And you're right. I mean, it was an amazing thing to see. But, I mean, honestly, Devin, if that headbutt, I mean, not the headbutt, but the headbutt by Ortiz and Floyd ultimately knocking him out that way. But if the fight would have went on, do you think Mayweather would have won the fight kind of easily?
I think so. He was touching him way more than, I mean, when I went back and looked at the fight, he was touching, I mean, Vic anytime he wanted to, you know, and I was sitting there, and Victor wasn't hitting him like the crowd thought he was, or, you know, the crowd oohing and eyeing, but he was really missing a lot of shots, you know, or barely
right.
touching him. So, you know, I thought Floyd was going to, you know, probably beat him up because he had swole eye already. So he was going to probably beat him up pretty bad. The referee had to stop it or something on the eye or something because he was touching him pretty much.
We're talking to Devin Alexander, boxer, one of the newest members of Golden Boy Promotions and also one of the newest members of the welterweight division. And Devin, with the tournament possibly on the horizon, or if that does not happen, when is the next time you see yourself getting into the ring?
Well, me and my coach talked it over. We think late December would be a good fight, or early January. So that's what Richard Schaefer and my manager Kevin is working on, so we have to see what happens with that. And you know, I'm in the gym. You know, I'm in the gym 3 days a week now, so you know, I don't like to get too much out of shape. I'm steady working.
And do you keep yourself around that your fighting weight most of the time?
Yeah, right now I'm like, you know, 6 or 7 pounds over my 147 limit, so I know I ain't gonna have no problem making 147, and I'm a definitely have more energy, you know, fighting at 147. I'm excited about that.
And it's a great opportunity for you with Golden Boy Promotions and possible welterweight tournament. I mean, this is some good times for Devin Alexander.
It is. I'm very blessed, you know. You know, I got a lot of critics out there. You know, I got a lot of critics, you know, and so did some of the greats did too. So, you know, I got to take the bitter with the sweet, and I got to show them. I have to show them. I got to constantly show them, you know, so.
And one of the criticisms of you, I mean, people are out there saying that you lost your last three fights,
even though
you lost to Bradley, you beat Matisse, you beat Kotelnik, but a lot of people think that you lost those fights. I mean, does that criticism bother you at all?
Not at all. I mean, this is entertainment. You know, fans going to say what they want to say regardless. You know, they buying the tickets or, you know, but, you know, they're entitled to their opinion. You know, it doesn't bother me at all. You know, what I worry about is getting in the ring and putting on a show and make sure I come out with the W. You know, that's my main focus. You know, I can't worry about what people are saying outside on the blogs or whatever. I just can't do that.
Right. Definitely. And you look at it again, your new promotion company, the Great One Promotions. How much have you learned from Don King? I mean, one of the greatest promoters to ever do this thing.
You know, you can't learn enough with Don. I mean, he's always constantly teaching you stuff, you know. He just told me watch out for snakes and, you know, this is a boxing is a shrewd business, you know, and you just got to watch yourself. Everybody's out to get you. Everybody's scrambling for, you know, every penny, you know, and you want to make sure you watch every dollar that's coming in, every cent that's coming in because, you know, the people that's in control of, they definitely watching. So you just make sure you be watching, you know. So
right.
Make sure you have the say so and everything.
Well, but let me ask you this. I mean, because you leaving a guy like Don King and going over to Golden Boy, is this now the future? I mean, are we seeing a Don King, like, and you have mentioned this, who certainly the talent, and is he at some point now sunsetting in his great ability?
I think, you know, I don't want to say, but, you know, Don is getting old, and, you know, in my opinion, he has lost a little step, you know. He doesn't have the power that he used to have anymore, you know, and I think that's kind of frustrating, too. But, you know, he's getting pretty old, and, you know, I think somebody's going to have to take over pretty soon, you know, because, I mean, everybody lives out their days, so.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
And I think that's a fair point. At some point, it does have to come to an end for the great Don King. And Devin, on this show, we like to play a game called Yes or No. I'll give you a topic. You just tell me yes or no. You ready to play?
I'm ready.
Yes or no, Larry Merchant knows ish about boxing.
No.
Yes or no? If Larry Merchant was 50 years younger, he would have beat up Floyd Mayweather.
No.
Devin Alexander will be the welterweight champion in 2012. Will be a welterweight champion in 2012.
Yes. Indefinitely.
Guaranteed.
Now, I want y'all to replay this. After I win that belt, I want you to replay it and say it. Hey, he said it on the show first.
I will. Definitely. Let's mark it down today, October 1st, at about 2:48 Eastern time, 1:48 your time. Devin Alexander has guaranteed that he will be a welterweight champion in 2012.
Most definitely.
And we'll see, Devin, you know, if I was in control of your career right now, I think I would try to find a way for you to fight Malignaggi first, get your feet wet, in the welterweight mm-hmm. division, and then I would go after Berto. That's just the way I would do it if I was
the
manager.
You know what? That's what my coach. That's why my coach been stirring up a lot of controversy, you know, on modernizing them side, you know. But you know, the powers that be say they don't want to buy Malinage, you know. But we are trying to get a fight like that to get the fee. Well, you're right. But
right.
You know, we'll just have to see.
And we'll definitely see what happens in 2012.
Yes.
I mean, you have guaranteed that you will be a welterweight champion.
I guaranteed it, my man.
You guaranteed it. You guaranteed it, and I got to keep you to that. I definitely have to keep you to that. And how's the new house going?
The new house is going good, man. I wish you could come out and see it one day, man. Just got the patio built, man, and it's going good. It's going good. I'm very excited. I'm blessed.
And you definitely are blessed. I mean, you got a lot of things going on, man. And, you know,
most
it's exciting
definitely.
Times. Exciting times.
Yes.
I wish I was Devin Alexander right now.
man, you can be me.
Devin. Like, he can't be Larry Merchant.
I wouldn't want to be Larry.
Well, Devin, if I was was a little faster, I think I could be you.
Yeah.
But again, Devin Alexander, I mean, again, it's always a pleasure to have you. You're doing some big things now. I mean, you got a big future ahead of you. Golden Boy Promotions, you got your promotional outfit starting, the Great One
yeah.
Promotions. I mean, it's a lot of great things going on. And we got to get you on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I just got on there like a couple weeks ago.
Okay, what's your Twitter?
It's D Alexander Real. Like Alexander.
D Alexander.
D, capital D, Alexander Real.
Okay. D Alexander Real.
Yes. Because, you know,
Again,
I went on there, they tried to make me an account, but they had all different types of Devin Alexander. I'm like, whoa. So I had to, you know, I had to make me a
you
real
get
page,
that,
you know.
You got to get it verified.
Yeah.
Make it happen, Devin. You got to, you know, get Golden Boy all out there. Make it happen.
Oh, man, they just set it up. They actually set it up for me. They the ones that set it up for me, and they're going to put it out there, and, you know, I know you guys are going to start following me. I don't know what I'm
Definitely.
Doing yet, but, you know, somebody got to help
me
out
with.
Make
sure you follow back. Make sure you follow back.
I got you.
Paul, please. don't get it. I mean, you know, you're a great guy. You're a great fighter. This man, he would think he had stock in this Twitter.
he loves Twitter, huh?
He loves Twitter.
I like,
you know,
I'm a fan of Twitter.
The world
yeah.
doesn't like Twitter. The world doesn't like Paul. I mean, the world loves Devin Alexander. I mean, you know, don't give him any more attention than he needs.
So we're looking at maybe December. We're looking at December
early
for the possible
December,
return.
I mean, late December, I'm sorry. Late December, early January at the latest.
Okay. So make sure everybody be on the lookout for Devin Alexander. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, D Alexander Real. Follow him there. He's got a lot of great things to say, so make sure you follow him there. Devin, as always, sir, it was greatly appreciated. Hopefully I can make my way out to St. Louis to see that beautiful house of yours.
Come see
and see what you got cooking there.
Come on down. Hey, I appreciate you guys know I love coming on this show. You know, anytime you guys want me on, just let me know. You know I'm coming.
Definitely, Devin. Appreciate it, man.
No problem.
And make sure you got the food ready for me when I come.
I got you. Whatever you want. Whatever you want. Steak, lobster, I got you.
You name it, I want it.
Okay.
Oh,
all right, Devin.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
My God. There's some days I question affiliations, and today officially is one of them, Paul.
My God.
Well, I mean, you know, he's got his promotional company getting started. He's with Golden Boy Promotions. He's got a bright future in the welterweight division. I mean, he's talking lobster steak. I mean, that's right down my alley. We all like a little lobster and steak, don't we?
Yeah, but Paul, I mean, but we like lobster and steak. But to say you name it, I want it. I mean, do we want it? Are we tweeting greed next to you? That's what you need to just tweet then greed.
No, but it's always a pleasure talking to Devin Alexander, a guy who came up the hard way, but really is making a lot of noise for himself right now. And, you know, I'm happy for him. You know, I'm rooting for him that he can get very far in that welterweight division. I mean, I would love to see him in there with Berto, but I think he needs to start small with Malignaggi. Unfortunately, he can't get anybody to buy the fight. But that would be the ideal situation. Alexander Malignaggi, there he gets his feet wet in that welterweight division, and he goes on to the big boys, to the Bertos and the Amir Khans, as he's going to be moving up, the Mayweathers of the world maybe, who knows, and possibly Pacquiao, who knows. Who knows moving forward. But, again, that's the fight that needs to be made, Mayweather-Pacquiao. Hopefully that fight can get made, and once that fight gets made, and then we can just, you know, think about all the other stuff. But, I mean, goodness gracious. If we can get that fight made, I mean, that would be great for boxing, and that would settle a lot of things. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, maybe Mayweather goes. There's been a lot of talk of Mayweather and Amir Khan. And so who knows if, you know, Khan does fight Lamont Peterson. That's his next fight. So we'll see if he can get by there. He may move on to Floyd Mayweather, which would be, Amir Khan impressed me against Ab Judah. Very impressive against Ab Judah. So we'll see what this guy has to offer, but I mean, he has quick hands, has little power, still have some questions about his chin, but we'll see moving forward what happens with Amir Khan. But big things for Devin Alexander. Big things for Devin Alexander. Does Larry Merchant know ish about boxing, Jeremy?
Come on, Paul. I mean, listen, I told you, I'm not a big Larry Merchant fan. I think what he did was ridiculous, but the whole situation was very, very awkward. He knows what he's a, listen, he's respectable in boxing. I think, and I told you, I lost a lot of respect for him after this. Who knows? I mean, I don't think Mayweather was wrong I think the way Mayweather started it was wrong, but I think for Mayweather to stoop to that level, or I'm sorry, for Merchant to stoop to that level was worse than the headbutt.
You talk about Merchant's threat?
Yeah, Mayweather's an idiot. And Mayweather, you know, I think that look at the trouble he's in his personal life.
Let's be clear about that. To this point, the man has not been convicted of anything. Let's be fair. The man has not been convicted of anything at this point. Will he or could he be convicted of something? Maybe. But at this point, he has not. So the man, in my mind, is an innocent man until proven otherwise. But, you know, with six pending cases, you know, hopefully you would think that one of them would stick. You would think one of them would stick. You would think he did something. But you don't know. You don't know. And hopefully he doesn't do any time, because I want to see Pacquiao Mayweather. So I hope he does not do any time. I hope he is truly innocent of anything, of all those things. And hopefully we can see Floyd Mayweather again, the great Floyd Mayweather, and Devin Alexander, a guy right now, he's looking for greatness again. He's looking for greatness. He set up his Twitter, just set it up. You know, he's looking for greatness now. Jeremy, we got to get you on Twitter.
That'll never happen, Paul. Never. The world doesn't care what I think.
We love to get you on Twitter. And love to get some followers out there for you on Twitter. So, you know, maybe you'll get yourself on Twitter. Who knows? But it sounds like you're totally against Twitter, and that's unfortunate. Very unfortunate. And you can follow me on Twitter at Go4Again, yeah. So make sure you follow me there. I say some great things, try to say some funny things, try to say some nice things. So make sure you follow me there. Make sure you follow Devin Alexander on Twitter, D Alexander Real on Twitter. That's DALEXANDEREAL. D Alexander Real on Twitter. Make sure you follow him there. Make sure you follow Willie Rofe on Twitter, Willie_Rofe. at twitter.com. Make sure you follow him there. Also, make sure you follow Drayton Florence, and his Twitter handle is Drayton Florence. And make sure you go to GameDayRaffle29.com and support some of the great things that Drayton Florence is doing. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgant, and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. For Jeremy Espy and everybody here at Go For It, we hope you have a nice day. See you later. Take care. Bye.